Before we move on to, thank you. So before we move on to Bill's story, I have just highlighted some really important points from the preface and forwards, and I always read these with sponsees because I just think there's just some real nuggets in there. One of the things is recognizing early on that my recovery is dependent upon developing a relationship with and relying on my higher power. You know, I am just a human power. I am going to fail. I am not responsible for somebody recovering. I don't have the power to make somebody recover. It's all about developing a relationship with a higher power. And on page XVI, it talks about the necessity of belief in and dependence upon God. And I think it's really powerful that those two things are acknowledged separately. It's not enough just to have faith in a higher power. We have to grow to depend upon that higher power. Page 99 talks about remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. You know, there's a saying that says, you know, if we're ready to work the steps, then Mickey Mouse could sponsor us through the steps. And if we're not ready to work the steps, Bill W could come back from the grave and sponsor us, and we wouldn't get recovered. So it's not about people, it's about developing this relationship with a higher power. And there's a sentence on page 120 that I found really comforting coming back from relapse. And it says that your husband will see at once that he must redouble his spiritual activities if he expects to survive. And that was my big lesson from relapse. It was about how much effort I was putting into step 11 and growing my relationship with a higher power. The rest of the prefers and forwards that I've highlighted are very much emphasizing the concept of step 12. So again, not even in the main body of the book, we're nowhere near step 12, and it's referencing how important step 12 is, you know, thereby to reach more alcoholics, save myself, I must carry the message to another compulsive overeater. And I just think that message right at the start is really, really important. And the other thing that really struck me when I was being taken through the book was on page XIII. It talks about to show other alcoholics, to show other compulsive overeaters precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. So I can stop figuring it out. You know, I had hundreds of self-help books. Every time a new self-help book came out, I bought it because I thought, this is it. This is going to fix me. This is the thing that's going to fix me. And I just can stop figuring it out because what I have to do is follow the instructions in the big book. I am given a set of instructions to recover. And I don't have to think about it. All I need to do is follow the instructions. So those are just some kind of powerful points in the prefers and the forwards. But let's move on to Bill's story, which after the doctor's opinion is a continuation of step one, which, as we know, is we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable, and the spiritual principle behind step one is honesty. And there are two components to step one: powerlessness and unmanageability. And the dash in the description of the step is what hangs these two things together. And interestingly, my addictive substance is only mentioned in the first part of step one. All the other steps relate to my relationship with me, my relationship with you, and my relationship with my higher power. Food was what I just did to cope with life. Life was the problem. And it took me a long time to get my head around that because I used to think that my life was unmanageable because I was a compulsive overeater. You know, if I wasn't super morbidly obese, if I didn't look like this, if I could only do this, my life would be fine. And I know today that it's the other way around. My life is unmanageable, and that is why I compulsively overeat. You know, I've lost half of my body weight. My life is still unmanageable some days. You know, the size of my body bears absolutely no resemblance to the size of my disease. And it took me a long time to really truly understand that. So Bill's story gives us an opportunity to identify. It shows us what the disease looks like in a person. And it shows how Bill thinks, feels, drinks, and progresses in his disease. this is what it looks like to have our disease. So I know some people really struggle with Bill's story, but just try and forget, if you're female, try and forget Bill's gender. Try and forget that he's talking about alcohol instead of food, that he dabbled in stocks and shares, that the context is in the 1930s. And instead of looking for the differences, think, how does this apply to me? So when did I think, feel, and eat like Bill drank? And the first 23 pages of Bill's story focuses on showing us the signs of having no power over certain foods or food behaviors. And right on page one of Bill's story, we're being given an insight into how Bill was using drink to change how he feels. It talks about feeling flattered, heroic, feeling part of life at last. He was lonely and he turned to alcohol. And it also shows Bill's ego. You know, it's saying, I fancied myself as a leader, that I'd be at the head of vast enterprises. And I did exactly the same with food. You know, I used food to change how I was feeling. I used it for purposes other than nurturing my body. So I can just lay my story on the top of the first page because I did exactly the same. And on page two, he talks about proving to the world that I was important. And I never felt good enough, despite the feedback I got that I was excelling at my job. I just never felt good enough. But then there were moments when I felt better than, you know, how come my colleagues are disagreeing when I've had this brilliant idea? My ego absolutely at large. And obviously Bill's wife was really worried about his drinking, and it's, but he says, I would still her forebodings. He was diminishing the seriousness of his disease. And I did that with my family. You know, I thought I was the only person who wasn't going to get complications from obesity. I was completely delusional. And then I always smile at the bottom of page two, where he says, we gave up our positions and off we roared on a motorcycle, the sidecar stuffed with tent blankets and a change of clothes. If that's not an example of unmanageability and a chaotic life and self-will run riot, I don't know what is. So what are my examples? You know, I might not have roared off on a motorcycle, but I had plenty of examples of an unmanageable life. So what are my examples of my unmanageability? And then on page three, Bill says he'd arrived. He thought he was invincible. You know, he was earning all this money. People were applauding what a fantastic guy he was, how great his work was. And I had that, you know, I had money, I had praise, but it's never enough. It was never enough. And we talk about in the program about our ego stands for easing God out. And I was reminded that my ego isn't a bad thing. I think we often talk about our egos as something evil and it's a bad thing. My ego is trying to keep me safe, it's trying to protect me. But because I'm an addict, my ego works overdrive trying to protect me. Also on page three, he talks about drink was taking an important and exhilarating part of his life. And again, I identify with that. You know, food worked for me for a time and until it started to harm me. And it got worse. Bill talks about his drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. And my disease progressed. It got worse and worse. And certainly in my 5 years of recovery, it had gotten unbelievably worse because my relapse was like nothing I had ever experienced. I thought my eating was bad when I first came to OA, but oh my God, was it worse after those 5 years of recovery? It was so much worse. I didn't just pick up where I left off, it was a whole different dimension. And Bill talks about using activities to legitimize his drinking, like golf. And I did that with food. You know, if somebody was going out, if they were going for coffee, I was there because there'd be food. I didn't care about the people. All I was interested in was the food. Any activity that involved food, I was there. And Bill's talking now that he's drinking every day and every night. And that was my experience. I was binging every day, multiple times a day. It was just progressive. And we talk about this disease being permanent, progressive, and fatal. And then he has a really big problem at work, and he talks about going back to the bar. Tomorrow was another day. And as he drank, the old fierce determination to win came back. Bill was seeking comfort from his pain in alcohol, and that's exactly what I did with food. And as I binged, I used to think, I'm going to sort this tomorrow. I'm going to really get my act together tomorrow. This is my last binge. And I was planning my next diet while I was binging. But the problem was, tomorrow never came because I repeated the same behavior over and over again. And he talks about liquor ceasing to be a luxury. It became a necessity. And again, that happened with me with food. I could not live without excess food. And Bill was needing more and more alcohol. And as time went on, I was needing more and more food. That's how my disease progressed. And yet, just like Bill, page five, I still thought I can control the situation. And there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope. You know, I had periods of dieting where my family would get the hopes up. They'd get really excited because they could see that I was doing something about it. And I'd get all the books out. I'd be doing kind of healthy shopping lists. I'd clear my cupboards out. And I thought I could control the situation, but that's a delusion. And that will lead me to the grave. Thinking I can control my situation will absolutely lead me to the grave. And I delude myself because I'm so desperate to be a normal eater and because I have a twist of the mind. And again, Bill says on page five, this time I meant business. And so he did. But shortly afterwards, he came home drunk. There'd been no fight. And I promised myself I would stop. And I truly, truly meant it. But no matter how much I wanted to stop, I just couldn't. I did a lot of my binging at night before I went to bed. And I would go to bed thinking, that's the last time I've done that. I am never doing that again. And I would get up in the morning, I'd have a shower, I'd still be thinking, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to do it again. And then somehow, between the bedroom and the kitchen, I would be getting a carrier bag and walking around my kitchen and just filling it with my binge foods. This would be 6:30 in the morning, and I'd be driving to work eating those binge foods. That was exactly what my life was like. So, have you seen your eating or your eating behaviors become progressively worse? Have you been able to control your cravings? This is so fundamental as part of our step one experience. And then on page seven, Bill says that he learned that he'd been seriously ill, bodily and mentally, and his incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. And I could be successful in many areas of my life, just not with food and eating. And that was one of the baffling features of this disease and what kept getting in the way of my step one surrender. You know, if I'd have been using drink and drugs, I just would not be able to function like I did with the food. You know, I could have binged on £30 worth of food before a board meeting. I had a really responsible job, and no one would know because I'd clean my teeth, I'd put my lipstick on, I'd spray myself with perfume, and off I went into a very senior meeting. Even though I was off my head on sugar, I was still articulate and able to perform and do my job. Even though I wasn't fully present in my head, because I was focusing on the leftover food that I'd go back to binging after the meeting. But if my substance had been drink or drugs, I would have been dismissed. I would have lost my job. And that delusion fed my disease and kept me from that real step one surrender. And then Bill thinks, well, he knows about himself now. Surely that's the answer. And I had so much knowledge about myself, but it wasn't enough for me to be able to stop. And then on page eight, he describes the feelings that us as compulsive overeaters have felt. You know, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair. I had been overwhelmed. Food was my master. Sorry, alcohol was my master. Food was my master. Food was in charge. I took a bite of my binge food, and the food took me, and I was eating against my will. And that's where Bill was. So he gets scared. So fear sobered him a bit. You know, he tried self-knowledge, he tried willpower, and fear worked for a little while, but it didn't work long term. And I tried all of those things. You know, I'd significantly damaged my heart through 20 plus years of compulsive overeating. And I know that if I relapsed, that would not be enough to stop me compulsive overeating. Because I can just compartmentalize that and put it somewhere in my brain. And then again, then comes the insidious insanity of the first drink. And, you know, I often commit the most insane act from a position of abstinence. I pick my binge foods up. And This is so powerful, how dark it is before the dawn. And then in reality, that was the beginning of my last debauch. And he talks about being catapulted into a new dimension. So we've had 8 pages of absolute hopelessness, of really being driven home about the message of how hopeless this disease is. But then we start talking about recovery and what a miracle that is. And page 9 to 16 starts to describe what Bill does as part of his recovery. So on page 10, he talks about being interested in the solution. He had to be, for he was hopeless. And for me, it was that kind of deep down surrender, and my hitting bottom cannot be dependent on my external circumstances. So I was unable to walk properly. I avoided climbing stairs at all costs because I couldn't breathe when I got to the top of stairs. I couldn't wash myself properly. If my hitting bottom was dependent on those things, I'm in trouble, because once those things start to improve, for me, losing a few stone, I start to feel not quite as out of breath. I start to think I've got this. So it can't be dependent on my external circumstances. It's got to be a deep down realization that I'm totally screwed. I'm totally out of ideas. I cannot do this. And therefore, I need a help from a power that isn't Gail or isn't the food. So, are you convinced that there is no other solution? And even in recovery, when your life gets better, are you still convinced that there is no other solution? But it's not as easy as, well, the solution is a power greater than me, because Bill then starts to talk about some of his issues with a power greater than him. When they talked of a God personal to me, who was love, superhuman strength, and direction, I became irritated and my mind snapped shut against such a theory. And that's a reminder of the importance of being open-minded. When we set off with the set-aside prayer, what I think I know about God can get in the way. So a practical exercise that I did was, what are my ideas and beliefs and old ideas and beliefs about God? And I wrote those on one side of a piece of paper. And then on the other side, how would a kind, compassionate, forgiving God respond? And that was a really helpful exercise, particularly coming back from relapse, because my head kept telling me, well, if I had a higher power, I wouldn't have relapsed. And of course, that wasn't the situation. The situation was I stopped working the program. My higher power didn't stop working for me. And then on page 11, it says God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. So God will do for me what I can't do when I'm defeated by the power of food. That is my experience. So have you admitted complete defeat? And then this is a really wonderful description of recovery. Here was something at work in a human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. And that is what happened to me and countless other people, lots of people on this call. This is what recovery feels like. And one of the definitions of a miracle is an occurrence with no logical explanation. And, there was no logical explanation for me how one day on the 20th of March, 2020, I was absolutely up to my neck in food. And the day after, I got to a meeting, I asked for help, and I got through that day abstinently. There is no logical explanation for that. And thank goodness for the sentence on page 12. Why don't you choose your own conception of God? And that just opens the door. It gives us freedom. I can let go of my old ideas and prejudices towards God. I don't have to believe what another person believes. I can have my own concept. And it says it was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make a beginning. And that willingness is so important. And I often hear people say, I'm praying for the willingness to be willing. And willingness is a start. But we need to remember this disease kills people while they're waiting for willingness. So for me, I just had to take the action. I just had to take the action. If I waited to be completely willing, I may not still be here today. So I had to take the action and ask for help. And then Bill says on page 12 that he was convinced that he had a higher power all along. And, you know, when we have the humility to turn to a higher power, when we are completely out of our own ideas, this higher power is there for us. And he recognizes his experience in the cathedral. You know, he had this sensation in the cathedral. He was really moved. But then he realizes that he blotted that out with all his kind of, you know, his own thinking and his resentments and his fears and his material thinking, all of that. And when Ebbie is describing his experience when he's 12-stepping Bill, he says that, you know, he's going to be given all he needs to live. All his problems will be answered. All we need to have is a belief in God, willingness, honesty, and humility. And we're told that it's simple, but not easy, because I have to turn to my higher power in all things. I can't just give my higher power the food. You know, that was pretty easy. I knew I was screwed. But actually, when it came to my kids, did I think that God knew better about my kids than me? Not really. And I'm still very much a work in progress on that. And it says that these were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. And when I became willing to accept what this book says, I found help from the higher power. And Bill's experience was sudden. You know, Bill had a white light, really profound experience. That's not what happened to me. My experience has been gradual. And it clarifies that in Appendix 2 at the back of the book in the spiritual experience, that those pages are almost written like an amend, because it's saying, you know, we're sorry if we made you think that you need to have this sudden spiritual experience. Most people, it's gradual. And then on page 14, it says that my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. And again, this sums up why I relapsed, because I didn't do this. Particularly, was it imperative, above all else, to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for Gail, because if Gail fails to perfect and enlarge her spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, Gail will not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If Gail did not work, she will surely binge again. And if she binges, she will surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With Gail, it is just like that. So that's a really powerful reminder that I have to continue to work with others. That's how I get to keep my own recovery, by giving it away. But it also tells me that just because I'm in recovery, it doesn't mean to say that I'm going to have this wonderful life. It's telling me that I'm going to have certain trials and low spots. I'm going to have challenges in my life. My life's not going to be wonderful all the time, but I'm going to have a higher power that is going to help me and give me what I need to get through any challenges that I'm presented with. And again, on page 15, it says, you know, I soon found that when all other measures failed, so meditation, prayer, outreach, when all other measures failed, work with another compulsive overeater would save the day. For me, that is the magic of step 12. And there is scarcely any form of trouble or misery which has not been overcome among us, because we are given a solution for life and a solution for living. And that, to me, just sums up this program, that the hopelessness that Bill had at the start of his journey, and then the miracle that happens to Bill. So again, we're just going to take a couple of minutes. There's just a couple of questions to consider on Bill's story. What areas of Bill's story do I identify with? And do I see how I cannot control my cravings? And what are my examples? So let's just take a couple of minutes just to jot down some bullet points. And then if you would just share your thoughts, that would be wonderful. Thank you. And again, Eve's popped them in the chat. You're doing a great job, Eve. Thank you.